Welcome to the Glory Sports Podcast Network, where you'll have a front row seat to the conversation shaping sports and culture right now. Brought to you by the editors at Glory Media, plus a few of our friends. Here, you'll find everything from exclusive athlete interviews and co-host analyses to behind-the-scenes stories and hot takes. For those that love the game, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Glory Sports Podcast Network. Let's get into it.
Welcome back to D-Row and the Die Hard Podcast. I am your co-host, Ben Battelle, and with me is the legendary Dwayne DiRosario. D-Row, how you doing? But before you say anything positive, let's go over what the hell happened on the weekend. Perhaps the sporting event of the year, to be honest, the World Series. Unfortunately, the Blue Jays lost
the Game 7.
You were there to experience probably what went down as one of the greatest baseball games of all time. How was it?
Yeah, it was. You know what? It was emotional roller coaster. The whole series, to be fair, was emotional roller coasters. Yeah. Give hats off to the Dodgers. You know, what a team. Good team. Very deep. I really thought winning one, having to win one at home of the two games, I thought we'd really pull it off. So did everybody in that stadium. But I know destiny had it that it wasn't meant to be. And I think when you look back at, you know, every the small details of what could have happened and this play and that play and, you know, should have slid in at home plate. It was still there for us.
I know. Yeah. That's because we were
closing.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So it was still there for us to win. And unfortunately we didn't get the job done. And, you know, that's going to be the bitterness to this whole thing is that, you know, you're so close, but yet so far. And, you know, but there's a reason why Dodgers are back-to-back champions. You know, it's hard to do it one time to be in the finals, much less to do it 2 years in a row back-to-back. It's, you know, it just shows the team that we're playing against, that we're up against, you know, and to be fair, a lot of positives to take out of it. We're still a very young team. Great learning experience that we can build hopefully for next year. But as you know, in sports, there's still no guarantee next year. So this one's going to sting for a while.
It's a hard place to get back. I mean, any championship, but this one, like, you got team, we got free agents that are may leave this year. We got guys that are up in the air.
Yeah, things are going to happen, like, right? You got to fill spots. It's sports. And,
you know,
man, hats off to the Jays, though.
Nah, you know,
you guys got there. You got there where a lot of teams didn't. You created a environment that hasn't been in this city for a long time, especially around baseball.
Been a while.
So unfortunately, we didn't, as you say, get over the plate. And
dude, Game 7, extra innings. Like, you can't get much closer than that. And it's in
top of the
team.
Ninth. Oh my gosh, the home run. He just silenced the whole crowd. Like,
you know how many home runs that guy hit all season, D-Row?
Can
in
you,
162 games, the guy who tied the game for the Dodgers, he hit 7 home runs. He was their last hitter, their ninth hitter.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
you know, it's just shit like that that just makes you think.
Ah, man, there's so many things we could talk about regarding that, but the fact is, as they say in sports, you could twist and turn, you could say this, you could say that, but at the end of the day,
yeah, you have one plan, the gods have another plan.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into what we got today for today's episode. It's been a very busy week in all fronts, in the drama front, in the European stage, and domestically. We had some Champions League heavyweights face off in Bayern and PSG and Liverpool, Real Madrid. We have some very exciting Premier League matches this weekend. And Cristiano Ronaldo did another interview with Piers Morgan over the last week. So let's start off with this interview with Piers Morgan. Now, we all know who Piers Morgan is. Whether you're a fan of him or not is irrelevant. I mean, we just watch this because it's Cristiano Ronaldo and he's getting interviewed by somebody who is asking him questions. That's it. But as usual, Ronaldo's getting up there in age, and I've noticed that whenever he has one of these interviews, he has more and more shit to say. I'm a huge Cristiano Ronaldo guy. He's my favorite player. But
well, you got the hat on.
I have the hat on. Some of these quotes, though, man, are just like, they're a bit edgy. Like, you know, we'll go through them and we'll start off with this one. So one of the first quotes that I thought, you know, it's pretty light. We're starting off pretty positive, but also kind of bittersweet. He said, "My retirement is near. It will be difficult. I might cry, but I've already prepared for my future." So I was anticipating this. He's already 41 years old.
Yeah, I mean,
Messi's getting
inevitable.
Up there too.
It's inevitable.
The era is coming to a close.
He's done so much for the game. I mean, if he wants to move on with his life, he's I think he's free to do so. I mean, you know, he's a family guy too. And the reality is he has kids getting up there. I know, same thing when I was in my phase of, you know, how do I feel about retirement? I truly retired because I want to invest that time into my kids. I want to be there more and support them more on their journey as I saw them start to blossom in their careers. And I felt that it was time for me to, you know, stop what I was doing and pursuing my dreams. I was comfortable and I was happy to where I was in my own career, that I wanted to, you know, be there to support my sons and fully 100% support their journey and their career, which I did. And maybe he's coming to that point where now too is that, you know, it's I don't think it's by any financial situation. It's more like, am I happy going on the field again? Where's my family at? Where's my kids at? Mm-hmm. And do I have to really start to think about, okay, maybe I need to be focused on more being a dad now
and
that side of life.
It's definitely not a financial situation.
No.
I think the guy
but you never know. I mean,
41 Bugattis.
Right. And that could be a problem.
It could be, yeah.
You know what I mean? You got 41 Bugattis. I mean, there's a cost for that unless everyone is given to him. I mean, he is a guy of that status where a lot of stuff he probably does get.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to pay for
it. Yeah, totally.
But, you know, with that high cost, there's high cost of living, high cost of this. Everything's an expense. Mm. So, you know, that's why a lot of athletes, unfortunately, are in a financial crisis when they retire.
Some of them, a lot of them
three to five years after.
Yeah, right? That's when it usually happens. I think he just got announced as football's first billionaire. So, I mean, I hope he, you know, I know he's spending a lot, obviously, this lifestyle that he lives, especially in maintaining his physique and his body and his fitness alone is millions and millions of dollars. But yeah, I mean, retirement is here. And like you said, you guys actually, there was a second follow-up quote that he said he wants to focus on his kids more. So, you know, this, again, I'm starting off light with this stuff.
Yeah.
This is just easy stuff. And you know, it'll be sad when he goes, but it'll be appropriate. The second one. His partner, Georgina, and I are planning to hold our wedding after the World Cup with the trophy beside us. Plans on winning the World Cup.
Why not? You're going to the World Cup. You got to think, I'm going to win it. Every team's got to think that.
I love it, man. That's trademark Ronaldo confidence.
Yeah, and not only that, you're projecting it. You're putting it into the universe that, you know what, I want to, when I get married, I want to marry with my two loves of my life, football and win the World Cup and his soon to be wife. So, you know, kudos to him, man. He's a guy that's very thought out. He's a guy that's very particular. He's very planned and organized. You know, you cannot be right. And I share this with my kids as well. And kids in my program is that you cannot be successful year after year after year if you're not, life isn't really planned and organized.
Yep.
You know, and every day you have a routine. So this guy's very thought out. He knows what he wants. He has key objectives. He's made it very clear here, his objectives and his goals. And we'll see. We'll see if he could reach it. But, you know, he's like you said, he's up in age and, you know, there's not really much more for him to win than a World Cup.
That's the last piece of the puzzle for me. I mean, I've watched him his entire career, and he's won everything else, and that's the one. That's the one thing, right? It's football's most iconic trophy. You know, no matter how you spin it, you can say Champions League, you can say Euro, you can say Copa America, but fact of the matter is, everybody knows what the World Cup is. Everybody watches the World Cup. Mm-hmm. You know, a third of the world watches the final alone when it comes on TV. So, that's the prized possession. More on the mentality side, he said. His next one was, I don't care what people think of me. They say I'm arrogant. I don't mind. Public opinion doesn't mean anything to me anymore. I love that.
I love it too.
That's my favorite one of the bunch, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because as a professional athlete, you got to realize that people are going to always dictate to you, oh, why are you doing this? You should be doing that. How are you living? And, you know, that's the thing about social media too. You want to show some aspects of your life, but you're not going to really see what really people are going through, because then it's just, you're opening a door of just constant criticism or constant whatever it is,
exactly. However
it
comes, judgment,
you know, judgment, whatever the case is, right? So the fact that, you know, he's 100% spot on, and I hope this new generation understands that, because I know what they do, you know, after the game, win or loss, they're in the locker room, they're trying to read what are people saying, and you can't play sports like that. You can't play sports thinking or worrying about what everybody's going to think about you, how people are going to perceive you, how people are going to judge you. You just have to know within yourself, you're trying your best to do the right thing first and foremost, and you're trying to always have class and respect for the sport.
And then the last one, which I think we're going to have wildly opposite takes on, winning the World Cup isn't a dream for me. Winning a tournament that lasts 6 or 7 matches can't define my value as a player or make me one of the greatest in history. Do you think that's fair? What is your opinion on that one?
I said that about Messi when people are saying, oh, he has to win a World Cup. And I'm just like, the what he's done and the product that he's continuously brought to all avid football lovers, he's arguably one of the greatest players of all time, with or without the World Cup trophy. And that's what pretty much Ronaldo's saying here, because he's also covering himself too to say, you know, it's hard, as we saw in baseball. It's hard it's hard to get there, man. It's hard to win a World Cup. It's very difficult. And some players are very blessed to win it multiple times, right? So, but I don't think that is the end all be all, even though in a sport that has always captured the greatest of all time, Maradona, Pelé.
It's a big narrative in soccer.
Yeah, it is a big narrative in soccer. That's going to be hard to change that narrative, right? Mm-hmm. Like Cristiano Ronaldo would leave the game and say, yeah, he's won everything, but he hasn't won a World Cup. And then when you put comparisons on there, you compare to Messi, and Messi has won a World Cup. And Pelé won a World Cup. It's hard. But he's still one of the greatest players, arguably one of the greatest players of all time as well, in my books, you know?
Yeah.
I am a Messi lover. I think Messi's the greatest. But I would put him up there as well, and that's just me, because I'm not biased. I'm just sensible in the fact that Ronaldo as well has produced an amazing career. He's produced amazing moments, and we're not talking about 1 or 2 or 3 years. We're talking about year after year after year after year. Yeah. This guy's putting up numbers. He's constantly in the conversation. He's constantly doing big things, club and country. And players like that is you gotta give credit where credit's due.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I thought we were gonna be opposed on this. I totally agree with you. I think he's right about the value of 6 or 7 matches. Like, it's at the end of the day, that's what it is, but it's not that. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like he's kind of right and wrong. It's the World Cup. You can't. What if it was 20 matches? Would it matter more? Yeah. Like, that's kind of an irrelevant argument. But he's right in the way that it's like 6 or 7 matches shouldn't define your value as a player, mm-hmm. because anything can happen.
Yeah, it's not a single team sport.
No, it's a team sport. A team can catch fire and go to the final. Like, we've seen that with Italy, the way they won the Euros a couple years ago. Morocco made the semifinals of the World Cup. In that last edition, so a team can just catch fire. Now, if you're going up against a team like that and you lose, that's just the way of the tournament's, the way the football gods are feeling that day. But
the only thing I would say about this is the first comment.
Winning
the World Cup is not a dream for me. Whoa.
Slow down, baby.
Because you just finished saying you next year when you win the World Cup, you're gonna get married with the World Cup and your wife. So
that's the only
every kid's dream to win a World Cup. Let me just get that straight. That's every kid's dream. It's like playing at baseball. Every kid's dream is to win MLB, World Series.
Every hockey, Stanley Cup. Like, everybody has the dream.
And that's like North America, Stanley Cup. The MLB, that's North American. World Cup is global. World Cup is the whole world. You're competing against
2.5 billion people watch it.
Billion people, every country represented. You know, it's a next level, and man, I can't wait for it to come.
I'm buzzing. Like, I imagine since you were downtown yesterday, you were doing morning
mascots.
Shows.
We had all the mascots out yesterday, showing them off to the city. You know, the mascots always bring energy, excitement for especially young kids, for the fans.
Totally,
they just add that extra, you know, even just walking around with them, like, oh my God, and kids just get excited. Everybody gets excited.
Yeah, we see you know? It. So it's a visual, right?
That's the effect that mascots have. So it just gives you a little bit of a pinch that, hey, it's getting closer and closer.
I'm excited, man. I have a feeling it's going to be a really, really good World Cup with a weird winner. I think we might see somebody win the World Cup who's never won it. We might see a team that hasn't won it in a long time.
Teams have never even been in a World Cup before and now qualify.
The expanding format is giving
it's
a
exciting,
lot.
Exciting, man.
You know what? Hey, it's given a lot of room for upsets. It's like as somebody who, like, I'm Portuguese Italian, as somebody who expects both of my team and obviously can I have a feeling Canada will do well, but on the other side of that, I expect the teams that I support to be in the later stages.
Yeah.
it gives you a little bit of room to be like, oh shit, you know, they might get knocked out by a Serbia in the early rounds. They might get knocked out by, you know, one of these smaller nations. Hopefully Serbia's a good team. But
hopefully we do a Saudi approach, man. I mean, they came out flying against, beat Argentina.
That was the surprise game, of the tournament, man.
But it's hard to play at home, man. It's a lot of pressure. So I hope we really manage our emotions. We really, leading into that, we get some big games at home. Mm-hmm. So we start to, feel that pressure and stuff like that, because what I saw, again, when we touched on Montreal, what we saw a couple weeks ago, we saw that probably effect of that home, you know, oh, we're home, kind of, not, I wouldn't say a little complacent, but, you know what I mean, just kind of maybe nervousness and, you know, that we need to overcome. But Ronaldo, what a career, what a player. If he accomplishes all that he sets out for, we've seen in the past, so... Can't play past him.
I mean, I hope that he's old, D-Ro, you know, and he's still...
He's older.
He's 41, and he'll be 42 by the time this rolls around. And my only worry is, like, listen, I watch all the international breaks. I watch him play whenever I can. He's a fair player. He still provides for Portugal. He still scores meaningful goals. He still proves that he can be up there physically with the best. Obviously, he's lost a step. Obviously, he's not the same player, but I'm worried that... You know, if we get to the World Cup, and it is in however many months' time, and if he fits into the squad, play him. If he doesn't fit into the squad as a starter, I don't want any of that drama.
But you just said he fits into the squad. You said he's still delivering.
He's still delivering, but like...
That's all that matters.
I've never been one to doubt
deliver.
Him.
Age doesn't deliver. He does a lot less than what a younger person would does
of course of
work rate, because he already sees the play, he already understands and analyzes the play, he understands because he's been in the play so many times, he knows, okay, I don't have to make that run, I can make a different run or a different approach or open my body differently and adapt that way because I have the experience.
Yeah,
and the experience part is what is the most dangerous for those guys. Look at Messi. Messi's still scoring goals.
I am on your side with this.
And he's not running all over the place to score the goals. And he's just picking his moment and boom, explode. Right?
Exactly.
So guys like that, once you have him on your team, because the reason why I say that, because the age thing always gets to me, because we're getting younger and younger and younger. And I don't always think that's the best thing. You have to have the experience. You have to have these guys, these leaders. You have to have these guys that just think the game. I want players that could just know when to deflate the game, when to put their foot on the ball, when to make the right pass. And then you have young guys around him, make the run. He'll find you.
Yeah.
He'll find you. Eventually, he'll find you.
Yeah.
Right? So it's that understanding that he has and those players have at his caliber, the Messis and stuff like that, that you can still see. These guys can play the game until they want to stop.
I agree with you. The only problem that I have with it is like the last World Cup, last Euro and the last World Cup, the energy around him and the it was a media circus.
That's his fault.
He's fighting Bruno Fernandes. They're not happy with him in the starting lineup. The coach doesn't want him to start. It was all this instead, like in reality, man, like
it's distracting.
This is the best team that Portugal have had in my lifetime. I don't want this media BS around the team at this time. Just got to focus. So when I say that, I hope he's ready. I hope it's good. If it works for the team, and as it has been, I will never not back him. Mm-hmm. That's my guy. But if it starts to dissolve and spiral into something else where it's noticeable physically, because you can score in qualifiers. When it gets to the World Cup, teams are going to step it up like a couple of steps. I hope so. That's all I'm saying. I hope it works out. We'll move on to our UCL recap. Bayern Munich defeat Paris Saint-Germain 2-1, 15 straight victories on the season. They're the hottest team in Europe under Vincent Kompany. He has this team chugging. He's got players. He's got five players for me that have stood out. Harry Kane has 22 goals and 3 assists in 15 games. Shocking. Luis Diaz has 10 goals and 5 assists. He scored a brace yesterday against PSG. Elise's got 7 and 7. Guys like Konrad Leimer are participating. Serge Gnabry's got 4 and 4. They score a lot of goals. They play a fast brand of football. It's kind of reminding us about that. We've mentioned a few times on the show, the German brand of football that has kind of been lacking the last few years. This is the team to beat in Europe right now. They just beat the team that we thought was the team to beat in PSG. I see them better than pretty much everybody else in the world right now. How real are Bayern?
Oh, they're real, and they're proving that they're real. They're going, it's typical German Bayern football, win everything all the time, mm-hmm. every game. Vincent Kompany's second year as a coach, you can see he's getting a lot more comfortable in the position. Yes, he's helped out in assisting managerial roles in the past, but you can see the players are really starting to buy into the way he wants them to play. You can see he's also a real team manager.
Yeah.
Like a player manager. You can see the guys really appreciate playing for him. You saw him running with the excitement and celebrating as well. So it was a huge win. It's a huge win for Bayern and a great motivational boost for the club and the organization and for him as a second year coach. This is a team to watch out for. Yeah. This is a team that could cause some serious problems going later down the stretch. If I'm any team, I'm looking at them saying, let's not draw Bayern. Please don't draw Bayern.
I mean, why would you, man?
We'll draw anybody else. Bayern, I don't know, man. They're just really playing the way that everybody's, you know, old Bayern way, you know, on their front foot,
yeah.
aggressive, attacking, relentless. With attitude, relentless.
Relentless,
they, man. They, right now, they're delivering on all cylinders.
It's a relentless team, and I mean, like, their goal differential is phenomenal at home. I think it's 20-3. Their away one is 12-2. Like, they score goals, they don't concede many, and they kick you when you're down. Like, they don't stop at 3-0. They don't stop at 4-0. They beat you comprehensively.
Yep, and I don't blame them.
That's the way to go. And I'm just like, I think back to Kompany, right? Kompany was the managing, he was a player manager at Anderlecht in Belgium. Then he went to Burnley. Now he did one more thing, and then he's at Bayern Munich, and he's in his second year, and he set the European record for wins in a row to start off a season at 15. I think he's still young. He's probably about 46 years old, yeah. 47. What a start to the managerial career. And at the beginning, like, this is the beginning of it. I think there's more to come for him. Not necessarily better things, but I could see Kompany coaching Man City in the future after Pep Guardiola's reign is over. That's what I think the logical next step is, if he wants to do something other than Bayern Munich, because right now in Germany, this is as good as you can be.
Yeah, I mean, it's after Bayern, it's only up from there. Like, I mean, the options of clubs has got to be on that.
It has to be the Barca's, right? The Reals, yeah, exactly. the United's, so, the City's, Liverpool's.
Great job over there. I mean, they're exciting to watch.
Yeah, it's a fun football. The next match we had is probably, again, a surprise. I don't know how to approach this team anymore. We talk about them every Ooh, show. Liverpool. I got no idea, man.
Real Madrid, because of both of them.
It's a really good point, actually. Yeah, one, but especially Liverpool lately. Like one game was bad. One match they showed promise. Finally, they get some consistency. They win at the weekend against Aston Villa. They bring, you know, they host Real Madrid at Anfield. And there was murals of Trent Alexander-Arnold that were defaced, and a lot of attention and focus towards that relationship. Obviously, it didn't matter. Liverpool came out and were on the front foot the entire game. So my question for you is, you know, game aside, is this a turning point for the team? It's a huge win.
Like you said, man, it's really tough to decipher, because we've seen this Liverpool start of the season, and then we've seen them get into a funk that they've been struggling to get out of. And hopefully for the Liverpool faithfuls, this is a turning point for them. You know, they have Man City this weekend.
Tough
uphill battle. But this proves that Liverpool is a good side, though.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever doubted the fact they're a good side. It's just, why are they not performing? They've had a setback, and it's like gotten to them, right? They had a little setback, and then all of a sudden it just was like bad result after not even so much bad result, but just bad performance after bad performance. Yeah, you can still perform well, and the result don't go your way. You're like, you tip your hat to say, okay, you know what? But it was the performance that for me was the most shocking.
Yeah,
you know, it's how the team responded, and it's like that's the response. That's not the response you expect from a Liverpool side. But then you see yesterday or 2 days ago, you see the response. That's the response you want to see from Liverpool.
Yeah.
And if you're Man City, you're going in there saying, oh, these guys are, you know, you beat Real Madrid. I mean, that's...
They handled them, actually. It should have been more if not for Thibaut Courtois, who made a number of...
Great saves.
Brilliant saves. He's right. I mean, it's hard with him, Thibaut Courtois. I mean, I'll just touch on this a little bit. When he is on, he's almost impossible to beat. I mean, with his size, his frame, his reflexes, fantastic keeper. But you're right. I mean, Liverpool are not a bad team. They do not have bad players. Arne Slot is not a bad manager. Mm-hmm. They just went through a weird time where he couldn't figure out who to start. And then out of his starting lineup, there was players in there that they had bad games and they had bad stretches. And this is how good the team can be.
Yeah.
Were Real Madrid at their best yesterday? Hell no. Mm-hmm. They were not that good. But they were not that good because of how good Liverpool were.
Yeah.
And we saw things like Vinny going up against Connor Bradley. I mean, anybody in the world's taking Vinny Jr. in that one-on-one. And what happened? Vinny got nothing all game. What happened, Mbappe had to come deeper in the field to try and collect the ball, and then that puts him at a position that makes him drift to Vinny's position that makes everything discombobulated. And what happens is Real Madrid didn't have much possession. Real Madrid didn't have many chances. Liverpool controlled a lot of the game, the majority of it, and now we're here with a huge, huge win.
Yeah, they were pressuring them as a unit. They were constantly in their face. They're engaged the whole game, and... You know, I mean, they have another tough opponent in Marseille coming up next round. They have another tough opponent in Marseille coming up in the Champions League. But if Liverpool could listen, I would always say this if I was a manager as a player, I would take all the shit, all the bad games, right now. Believe it or not.
Yeah.
Because what we saw from Liverpool is hopefully now you're gonna start to see them gradually climb, you know, because teams are going to go through that. It's very rare, like, a team is not going to have a bad spell somewhere.
Just goes through a perfect season,
right? So impossible. To do that now when it's early doors, I'll take that, because now I could tinker stuff a little bit, you know, see what this player, how he manages in tough moments. You get to see that early, where a lot of these teams aren't seeing a lot of those, you know, reactions. Right, because everything is going smooth sailing. So when things gets shit, it could go like real shit, real quick.
That's a really good point.
And the last thing you want that to happen is when there is no tomorrow. At least this is the group stages.
You know what? Yeah, at least this is happening in November.
Yeah, EPL is early doors,
not like February,
right? Where you know,
March,
April, when it's now, it's like, okay, semifinals, quarterfinals. You know, fighting now for last, you really know, the 3 point for league.
Yeah.
You know, now these players are unifying more. Their heads are up. They're putting hands around each other and say, okay, guys, let's go. Let's kick on now.
And to your point, they're not going to lose 4 in a row again. You know,
you hope not. Yeah.
But like, the odds of that happening again are very, very slim. So they've done it. Now they know not to do it again, or they know how not to do it again.
Exactly.
Excellent point. Yeah. I mean, listen, they got City this weekend. City just thrashed Borussia Dortmund 4-1. Borussia is the lesser of a team than Real Madrid, but that's a result nonetheless. It's going to be a good game.
Yeah,
it's going to
be.
And we'll get into that later, but that's something that Liverpool needs to think about. On to the next one. Your team, Barcelona and Club Brugge, had a thriller of a match. Nobody would have predicted that this would have been the match of the week, and it was 3-3. Lamine getting on the scoreboard. That's good to see him doing well. Ferran Torres was there, and then an own goal by Club Brugge. But what's the main thing that we talk about all the time with Barcelona, folks? They didn't. They chose the high line, and they got smoked by the high line.
Defending, yeah. It's gonna continuously punish you. Especially down the line, and constantly giving up goals, it's frustrating, because as a fan, you're seeing all the great stuff on the attack, but defensively they got to get it together. They got to find a way to keep clean sheets, because if you play every game and somehow a team scoring on you, and you're just relying on just scoring more than the other team,
it's a bad approach.
I get it, but it's tough against top teams. Right, and you're playing Club Brugge, and not to take anything away from Club Brugge, they're a top team in Belgium. But when you compare them to a Real Madrid, when you compare them to Inter Milan and these teams that are defensively solid, that are, you know, that's where the leaking goals becomes a real problem,
right? And I think like everybody is watching this Barcelona team play, and they're like, it's one fix, man.
Yeah, like, you're excited. Like, this is great games. They're excited to watch. You know they're gonna score.
It's fun. How much they're gonna give up? It's fun to watch, but like you're watching them get scored on, and you're like, just drop the back.
The line.
Just drop the line. Like, why are? Because they're not playing high. Mm-hmm. They're playing ridiculously high. Yeah. Like they are pushing the envelope all the way up to the halfway line, pretty much where you can, you know, if you drift forward, you can't be offside. But that's ridiculous. It's too far. And if it's like you said, if you're getting exposed against Club Brugge for, you know, they're a good team, what's going to happen later stage of this tournament? Because let's be honest with you. I'll be honest with you. A lot of people expect Barcelona to go deep in the Champions League this year. And I don't know if they'll do it.
I know I do.
I don't know if they'll do it if they keep on playing that high line.
I know I do. Because, you know, you're looking to say, okay, last year it was semis, right? So you're there's only one way now. And that's the thing that people got to understand is, and I know the Barcelona fans do and are very understanding of the only next option is finals or winning it.
Yeah.
There's no like quarters. Oh yeah, we did okay this year. No, you can't go semifinals 1 year and think that the only,
you gotta go.
And that's the thing with these big clubs. There's no like, if you go to quarterfinals, you didn't get to semis, you failed.
Yeah.
It's another year of you know, you gotta make tough decisions now, right? And that's clubs like Barca. So as a manager, you gotta look at that. You gotta evaluate, is this high line working? Okay, I like the high line, but in certain situations, we gotta drop. We gotta play a little bit more versatile. We gotta play a little bit more adaptive because this style is not working 100%. It's working on the attack, but okay. When we go to attack, let's drop our line back. Let's keep it safe.
Yeah.
And let's keep that ball out the net.
Some Barca fan on Twitter just described watching Hansi Flick style like you're riding a bike and then you take a stick and throw it in between the spokes of the front wheel and you flip over.
Oh, that's a good one.
But yeah, I mean, listen, expectations are high. Hansi Flick, we all know Hansi Flick is a fantastic manager. Won a sextuple with Bayern, so he has the pedigree. He's been there. Mm-hmm. Now it's like Arne Slot last week. You're being asked to adjust. You're being asked to sort of tinker with your lineup because now we're on a point where you lost El Clasico. Maybe not, or maybe because of the high line, it's unclear.
Yeah.
And now you've
Well, they got beat. They got beat.
They got beat they got though.
Beat. They got beat. And all
then
over the
and park. Then you've dropped points against a lower tier team compared to Barca because of the high line. Mm-hmm. So now we're at that point is. In this next La Liga game, is he going to go in there and is he going to change or is he going to roll with his system once again? Because then we're going to get to a point where if they keep on dropping points, if they don't get more results and Hansi Flick isn't adapting, we're going to have a difficult conversation, one that I would not expect we would have had with this team. On to our next one. Newcastle beat Athletic Club Bilbao.
Loud and proud.
Dude, effort. We're not going to go too deep into this.
Is that a Cher jersey? Is that a... Alan Shearer, who's that?
No, nobody on the back.
Oh, okay.
But it is of the era.
Yes, yeah, it's a classic.
Great kit with the Newcastle Pale Ale on the front. Yeah. I love this team. I love the way this team plays. It's all effort. They got such lovable characters. They're hard to beat, and they're impossible to outwork. It's a fun brand of football. The stadium is booming every time they play St. James Park.
They're playing the old school direct football. Get in the mixer.
English
right?
long get ball. Get in the mixer.
And it's working. So every team has got to do what works for them, right? This is a cup. This is Champions League you're playing for.
Mm-hmm.
Stick to what you're good at. They're doing that. They're proving that they can do it effectively. All the power to them. It's nice to see a historic club like Newcastle back in the conversation.
Yeah, I love it.
It's great for football. Again, one of those historic clubs and great result. And hopefully, again, they can carry that into the Prem and they could continue to have that energy and keep it flowing. Because as you mentioned, if they make it into the next round, look out. That's going to be a tough team to beat.
Love them. And then our last quick hit from the UCL side, Mourinho's Benfica lose again to Bayer Leverkusen 1-0. He's got a 6-2-3 record so far, but he's 0-3. No wins, all losses in the UCL. Given that record, how would you rate him? And a tough question for you. is the old Jose Mourinho that we know and love and respect and has garnered so much silverware in Europe. Is he gone? Is it over?
I think that could have been questioned a while ago.
I do agree.
With all due respect, you know, not taking away everything he's accomplished, but I've seen that when you went to the Prem, you know, you started to lose himself a little bit in this terms of what got them there. But my question, is it a Mourinho issue or is it a Portugal league issue? Or is Portugal league not as strong as we once knew it to be? You know, with Sporting, with all these teams, Porto, you know, are they still that powerful league, or are they gone back to just, okay, we're developing and selling players? And if that's the case, that's fine.
Yeah.
But you're not going to have the pedigree to compete against, you know, they're 6-2-3. It's not bad.
It's not a bad record, but in
right?
Europe.
But in Europe,
yeah.
Are they good enough for Europe?
Yeah.
And that's where the harsh realization needs to happen. You know, is the league good enough to compete at the international level? Because last time I checked, their national team are all pretty much playing all across Europe.
All across
Very
Europe.
Very few are in domestically playing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's something that really needs to be looked at. With all due respect to Benfica, yes, Mourinho, I think he's. I go back to the love and the passion. And remember, we spoke that, you know, maybe going back to his home
would
club
change that.
Would change that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It seems so domestically.
Yeah, yeah.
Champions League's another beast. It's another beast.
It's different. And like you said, you know, I think it's a double-edged sword in Portugal because they develop so much talent. And those three teams are so often, like, if you make an all-time Benfica or an all-time Porto or an all-time Sporting, they have some players,
100%.
Some ballers on there. And I think in the last decade or so, they had a really good balance of, like, they would be developing, keeping, selling. And that little era, the little run where they would keep players, they would oftentimes make it to the round of 16. They would oftentimes do well in the Champions League. But I think we're at an era right now where teams are willing to spend so much money for talent and young talent that they're skipping the keeping part. And they're just saying, well, this guy is 17 years old. He's got ridiculous potential. Let's sell him now for 85 million euros instead of taking the risk and selling him for 50 or even more.
Yeah, but there's a saying, like, you got to make money to spend money.
That's what I'm saying.
So maybe it's a case of, okay.
I don't know if they're spending that much, though. I don't know if they're reinvesting into the team because they're not keeping these guys for longer times. Like, if you think about, like, João Neves went to PSG, I think, at 22.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't have happened 10 years ago.
Right.
They would have waited till 24, and maybe in that span, he would have gotten better. Benfica would have made it to the round of 16 to the last eight, and then we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
If a team is offering you $50, $60 million for a player at that age,
yeah.
Do you take the gamble and keep him?
No, I don't. I think I'm pushing him out the door. I'll pack his bags for him.
Hey, you're ready to go. Look over. We got your bags.
Get out.
Go. Congratulations. But maybe they are spending the money. Maybe what they're spending in the academy. Maybe it's spending the grass in their development system, their feeder system. Maybe they're building nicer stadiums. I don't know how they're spending the money. But the fact of the matter is I don't know if those teams are equipped to manage Champions League football against teams that are buying your player for 70 million. And they got 15, 20 of them.
Yeah, well, I don't think that they were never equipped to do that. I think that's why when we talk about Mourinho's special run with Porto in 04 when they won the Champions League, like, that is an accomplishment that will likely never be replicated,
right?
At least in the modern era. But they weren't, I don't think the last 20 years of Benfica, Sporting, and Porto have been built to beat Real Madrid or City or Man U. I think they're just built to do well in the Champions League to a point where, all right, we made it to the round of 16. We squeaked into the last eight. That's enough money for us to reinvest into our academy. Because there's no question, those three academies are some of the best in the world.
Yeah.
With who they produce, even their scouting department. They get players from South America all the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of Argentines go and play in Portugal.
And Brazilians.
A lot of Brazilians go and play in Portugal. And very good players. Di Maria started out at Benfica.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we forget that these guys,
Otamendi
was at Benfica.
The list goes on.
These guys come there and they turn into players and then they leave and they come back. So I think, you know, in terms of the club situation, that's one thing. Mourinho needs to reinvent his tactics.
This
I don't care
football
if
heritage.
He is a European heritage guy with a lot of pedigree. It's sad to see him not be able to adapt.
But again, he's adapting. Look, his record.
Adapting by what? He's adapting by losing.
Six wins.
But look at it. You just said it. He went to Man U. Bro, he went to Man U. He went to Tottenham.
But it's not fair. It's not fair. It's not fair to evaluate him based on Champions League results.
No, but
with you're playing against giants. You know, against no disrespect toward a team that's not equipped for that.
Sure.
But domestically, he's doing his job. So it's hard to evaluate, assess Jose Mourinho based on his Champions League results. For me, it's very hard because now I'm looking at the roster and saying, well, who does he really have that could compete at that level?
Mm-hmm. And they were having a really rough spell before him. That's why he got hired. Like, let's not
and
sugarcoat
obviously something's
it.
Going good because domestically they're six.
Yeah,
they're on top of
they've turned it around.
Mourinho's doing his stuff. He's six wins.
Yeah.
Two draws?
Two draws and three losses. I mean, right? Yeah, I don't know. I want
a special European one champion. I think I'm a special
I
one.
Want him. I want that guy back, dude. I want the quotes back.
Yeah, he was a lot younger then.
He was
proving himself to Europe. He was happier.
You know what I think, too? I think every manager who has managed Man United in the last 5 years, like, I think it's like going to war. You come back with PTSD from all the bullshit you have to face day in and day out. Let's focus on a couple of fixtures ahead in this weekend. Start off with two teams that Mourinho managed in the last 5 years. Man United faced Tottenham. United is in eighth place with 17 points, 3-1-1 in their last five. Tottenham, sixth place, 17 points, two wins, one draw, and two losses in their last five. Tottenham has history on their side. They've won five of the last seven matches. And it feels like for United, at least, even though despite their bad history against Tottenham in the recent seasons, they feel like a different team. Yeah. Can they pull it off?
Flip a coin. Flip a coin. Yeah,
truly, it is like
flick
that.
Flip a pence.
Yeah, flip a P.
Yeah, yeah. But it's these two teams. It's again, I think of like Liverpool. They're just still not. You don't know what you're gonna get, right? But you know, playing at Man U, you know, you would favor Manchester United to have the upper hand because they're playing at home.
Mm-hmm.
3-1-1 their last five.
Yeah.
I believe, yeah.
They're a good streak. I mean, like that.
So Tottenham not such in a good streak. They're kind of more a little bit more, tides are a little bit more ruffled.
Yeah.
So I think this is Man U's game to lose.
I think this could be a statement game for Man United. I think it could be they win this game. We're turning the page on the horrible, horrible era that preceded us. Yeah, I think this is a very significant match.
Well, they jump from eighth to fifth place.
They jump. With one win, with 3 points. I mean, yeah. the difference between eighth
goals for, goals against,
eighth and second is 2 points. So I think it's like we said last week. It's a jungle, but I think for the moral, like the intangible aspect of this. If they win this game, if they draw this game, I would say if they win this game, that is a huge, huge step in the Ruben Amorim era. That is saying we're back on track.
If the results don't go their way, like you said, they could be in third place.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? I've never seen Premier like this before.
It's exciting. I love it. You're right, though. The biggest league in the league right now is Arsenal with 5 points. That's nothing.
Right. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
nothing. That's nothing right now. So speaking of that, the next one is... Liverpool's in third place with one more point than eighth place Man United. So Liverpool, third place Liverpool, take on second place Manchester City. They're separated only by 1 point, but their form in their last five games is very contrasting. Liverpool in the last five are one win, zero draws, and four losses. Man City, on the other hand, are four wins and one loss. I can't think of a bigger game right now. Maybe it's just bigger than the one we just talked about.
I can't think of a bigger weekend.
Yeah,
true. Because the stats are very similar to Man U, Tottenham, Liverpool, Man City.
Yeah,
like their stats are very, very parallel to each other. So again, as we spoke about earlier, we kind of touched on this game already. It's Liverpool's game to really go out there and to use that momentum.
Keep pushing, yeah.
And keep pushing on against a very confident, strong Man City side who's only looking uphill right now and want to be clipping at Arsenal's heels.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's important that we remember in Liverpool's slump that just happened a couple weeks ago, their defense was horrible. They couldn't stop a nosebleed. So they go into, they host Madrid on Tuesday, and they eliminate any impact from their best players. That includes Mbappe, and that includes Vinicius, some of the best players in the world. Now they got Haaland coming in. So different beast, very similar level. My concern is they might not be able to stop this guy because he's on a tear this season. He's the best striker in the world at the moment. No ifs, ands, or buts. Better than Kane. He's better than Mbappe. Let's go on to our offside or on point with Dwayne Di Rosario. Today we have two, and actually these are pretty good ones. The first one, Arsenal will break Chelsea's record of the least amount of goals conceded in a season. That was 15.
I don't want to jinx nothing, man. Why are you?
They're 10 games in right now. They've only conceded 3 goals. Yeesh, hey. What a game. What a team.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that? Offside or on point?
It's tough, man. It's so much more football to play against.
Don't believe in superstition. Just say what you're feeling.
I think it's offside.
No.
No, onside. Onside. Sorry. Onside.
Okay.
The Arsenal will. Not. I thought it meant will not.
But they're on pace.
They're on pace to do it.
They're on pace.
And the reason why I say onside is because I hope they do it. I really hope they do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
3 goals in 10 games. That's on pace to concede only like 11 the whole season because there's 38 games. Crazy. Second one, sports betting has ruined the watching and playing experience. Offside or on point?
Well, it hasn't ruined it for me because I still enjoy the game, but I definitely think on a global scale, I think it definitely has impacted the watching experience. I have friends and colleagues that bet, and it's like, that's all they're looking for. They're not really looking for the beauty of the game.
Yeah.
So that part, I can't even watch games with them. I honestly, God, I can't. Because
they're like plugging, get the assist.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta go back and leverage whatever it's called. I even know the lingo. I don't do it. But
yeah.
It definitely does. It has impact on the experience, and I like the fact that is the play, maybe the watching experience as well. Because having watched with people that are invested in that gambling and sport, you just can't. I just don't enjoy it watching it when people have stakes on the game. I can't enjoy it because that's all they're looking for, right?
And then they
get a goal and they're so happy. Like, what are you guys so happy for?
I know.
But they score goals. And it's like, okay, that's it. Like, team's losing.
Exactly. And I feel like sports should be like. Sports should be innocent to watch. You should be watching to watch your team win. It shouldn't be like, I got to hit my parlay and I got to get.
What I don't like is all this nonsense about who's going to win the coin flip, which team is going to have the first kickoff, what jersey are they coming out with.
Those are crazy ones.
Yeah, that's just nonsense. It just creates too much areas for just, why?
Do you know the one that they do like with the Super Bowl? If they bet. If the song will be over and under like 120 seconds or something,
I don't know that.
That's an actual bet.
Really?
Oh yeah, that's a bet on like Super Bowl Sunday.
On all this stuff and that's where it gets like the whole thing is just messing up the watching and the playing experience for sure.
Yeah, I think the playing experience
it gets too far with the betting and you know like. You're going to get mad at a guy because the keeper didn't make the save and you had whatever, how much money and bet, and you're going to terrorize the guy. You suck. You should have made that save.
Yeah.
It's like.
That's a whole other conversation with that, too.
It becomes dangerous. It becomes, abused.
They get abused.
Abused and stuff like that for you know, it's already demanding enough on individuals' preparation, psyche, training every day, trying to be up for the day. Nobody wants to get scored on. Nobody wants to miss the net. Nobody wants to misjudge a tackle for a penalty shot. Nobody wants to get a red card in the heat of the moment. So to be betting on that stuff, I don't like that.
I think part of it is like it's a part of the game now. It's going to be here. It's bringing in a ton of money for sponsorships and for the league and for visibility. That's you got to accept that task. And by the same token, the players who get
you don't gotta accept it, but you gotta live with it.
Yeah. But then the other side of the token is like, the players are grown men. They should be able to not want to gamble on the games they are playing in. That should be the thing.
Listen,
However, if you're gonna shove it in my face all day,
right,
and I'm gonna see it 24 hours a day, how can you blame me for taking a bet? Mm-hmm. So there's just this is a multifaceted issue that unfortunately was brought in by the simple thing of, hey, do you want to be able to bet on the game legally? And that's it. Then it opened this can of worms.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I guess, players are making astronomical amount of money today. A lot of them are based off of potential. I grew up in an era where you get paid according to your works. You get paid because you've had a great year, or you've had a great 2, 3, 4 years. You continuously deliver the respect in sport, you know, shirt tucked in, you know, not all this.
No holes in the socks.
Holes in the socks and cut socks and this and that. And it's gone too far. Like, you know, I don't mind tattoos. When the guys getting tattoos all over their neck, their face, their bodies. Like, hey, you want to express yourself, I get it. But then the kids are doing it, and younger kids are doing it. And it's just, I don't know, man. It's just gotten a little bit out of control, you know. And with betting, and then leading into the betting, it just tells to that now. Because if the players could do whatever they want to do, they get compensated whatever they want to do. There's no loyalty no more. Players jump from team to team, from team to team, team to team, all over the place. There's no sense of loyalty from the club or from the players. It's just all over the place, and gambling and betting adds even more to that.
Yeah. All right, man. That's it for this episode of D-Row and the Diehard, episode 9. We'll be back next Friday as usual with the best football content north of the border. D-Row.
Yes. Episode 9. Last episode. I just want to shout out, of course, because we're in CONCACAF, I want to shout out Jamaica and the JFF. Our prayers are with you guys there in Jamaica after the devastation of Hurricane Melissa. And, you know, you guys, if you can out there, try to support a country that has given the world so much, and just a beautiful place, island in the sun, and do your little part to support. In saying that, Dear in the Diehard, we're signing off.
Thank you for tuning into the Glory Sports Podcast Network. From candid sit-downs with game-changing athletes to expert analysis from our hosts, we're here to take you where sports and culture collide. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. Let us know what you thought and who you'd like to hear from next. And until then, thanks for listening.